Hey, this is Greg Cannon with Coppermark, also here with the Accurate Property Claims Network. And today I wanted to talk about documentation. I want to talk about the subject of how important documentation is. I got some examples here in front of me, so if I'm looking down, don't think I'm being rude. I'm actually going through this claim that we're dealing with recently right now. It's a large strip center complex. It's got a TPO roof on it. It's being handled by a large commercial property insurer that you probably know the name of, and it's being handled on top of that by a third-party administrator, a TPA, that I'm sure you know the name of as well. We'll leave their names out of it now, just in case it has to go to litigation. But from the very get-go, from the very set of getting this lead in our office, it had already been worked on for almost a year. Well, no, for over a year. We sent in a letter of representation, and immediately the TPA, or the third-party administrator, who's basically the adjuster, called and wanted to have a reinspection because he wanted to plead his case. About documentation, I know that there's two sides to the whole recording your meetings situation. Some guys agree with it, some guys don't. Let me tell you why I like to record my meetings on site. Where it's legal, all right? You gotta check with your own state to see if you are allowed to record without anybody's permission or even record with their permission. I mean, I don't know, but in this particular instance, in this state we were working in, it was legal for me to record without having to tell anybody. I've been asked in depositions whether or not I think that's ethical, and my answer is this, and it will be this every time. If somebody is licensed by the state to do their job they're doing, they already have an ethical duty to do their job appropriately. So they shouldn't mind whether they're being recorded out in the open or not. If they plan on saying or doing something that they don't want to have recorded, they probably shouldn't have a professional license to be doing what they're doing. That's my opinion. So that being said, I don't have a problem if people are recording me. I don't have a problem if they are recording me in the course of me doing my job out in the open without even telling me. Because I'm not going to do anything that I think might be unethical or I think shouldn't be on camera or on an audio recording. Setting that aside, I record my meetings, number one, first and foremost, so that I can remember what was said. Because if you're sitting there and there's a four-hour inspection with a TPA, an engineer, two different adjusters, and maybe even an attorney, who knows what's going on? You think the next day even, or maybe 2 weeks later, you're going to remember everything that happened during that meeting? If you can, then you should be doing something else and making a lot more money. I record so that I can remember accurately the details of the meetings and basically document what's going on for my file. Now, secondly, I also want to make sure everybody stays honest. And what's said and done at these meetings is accurate and referenced later as the actual accurate thing that happened. I always say accurate. I like the word accurate. It's one of my favorite words. I might say it quite a bit. But I think it's a perfect word because accurate means real. It means what actually happens. Because everybody says there's three sides to every story, right? His side, my side, and the truth. Accurate is the truth. You can't get around that if it's recorded. So in any case, that's part of documentation, the recordings of the meetings for future reference. At this particular meeting, I'm recording, and both the engineer and the adjuster showed up. Both of them were a little cocky because this was their third time being to this property. So they thought they were just going to come out there to explain their story and get me caught up since I'm late to the party. The problem is, I knew something they didn't, or I knew something that was probably a stereotype in this regard, is they probably didn't do a thorough investigation. Most of the time in these situations, they're doing just enough to make sure they can deny the claim. And I'm sorry if that hurts some people's feelings, but that's been my experience. The majority of the time in situations like this, when it's a large loss, the adjuster is not out there to seek and find coverage like you originally were trained during your AIC training. What they're out there actually trying to do is as little work as possible just to deny the claim, number one, to do less paperwork, number two, to look good to the insurance companies that are sending them business so that they can get paid and move on about their business to the next claim. During my investigation, I found water in the substrate all over the roofing system. I had a thermal camera out. We found, well, number one, there's leaking in three of the office spaces that are in this strip center. So, of course, there's going to be some sort of moisture going on there. Now, you guys that have been roofing for a while know the building code does not allow you to put a fresh roof over wet substrate. That can't happen. In some cases, it's against the law. So, what I found was the insurance adjuster noted the damage to all the metals on the roof and the gutter system, which is built into the roof system, meaning the TPO is actually over the gutter system and terminated inside the gutter. So in order to replace these hail-damaged gutters, they have to break into the roof system a good probably 9 to 18 inches. So what he allowed for was the entire perimeter of the TPO to come up to accommodate the replacement of these gutters. The problem with that is the substrate or the insulation board underneath this TPO was wet, not only along the perimeter, but a good 20 to 50 foot in some cases. And the reason I know it was 20 to 50 foot, and I'll tell you later, well, we'll circle back to that, but that sticks in my mind because it wasn't me that said that. So we meet the adjuster and the engineer, his engineer out there. I tell him, I listen to his entire story. He's saying they've been out here twice. They didn't find hail damage to the TPO. Even though there was hail damage to the TPO. But that's besides this point. I let him finish his story. It takes him about 30 minutes to get me caught up as far as he's concerned. And then I said, that's great. What about the water in the insulation board, the moisture in the substrate? What are we going to do about that? And he says, the what? And I said, yeah. So all of a sudden, the smugness leaves the engineer and the adjuster's face. Well, what are you talking about? I said, well, we've got moisture all over this roof and the substrate. It's been leaking in three or four different places, which didn't start until after the date of loss. The reason why the property owner called in the claim to begin with. Now, bear in mind, this was almost a year ago, right? Why hasn't anything been done about that? Well, we wrote him for a repair for the gutters and the strip over the gutters, he says. I understand that. But how are they supposed to break into this roof and replace that strip? Number one, it's against the manufacturer's installation instructions. Number two, we've got wet substrate. How is the new roof going to be put over wet substrate and be in accordance with the local building code, the state mandated code, which is the standard method of repair, and also comply with the policy? So while he's scratching his head, I'm giving him a second to think. In the meantime, his engineer is going downstairs to grab a Tramex. So if you guys are familiar with a handheld Tramex, it's a box, looks like a big trowel. It's green and it's got a little needle on there. You know, you put it down and it goes beep, 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 beep. You know, whenever you've got moisture, it shows relative moisture after it's calibrated properly. The engineer, I asked him when's the last time he calibrated it. He said this morning. So we're fine there. I guess he didn't expect to find any moisture. Everywhere he put it down, except for two places, that thing was pinging off the charts. Every single place. He just kept moving it, and we kept trying different spots, and there's moisture all throughout the substrate. Now, you guys know the moisture is going to spread out underneath this TPO before it finally starts leaking into the building, right? So if I've got leaks in the building, I mean, that's the whole reason I brought the thermal camera up there to begin with in my initial investigation where I found the moisture. So now the engineer's eyes are popping out saying, okay, well, maybe Greg has something here. After we're done doing this, the adjuster still is not on board. He's like, well, how do we know that the hail did that? Now you guys tell me, does it matter whether the hail caused the moisture intrusion? No. It exists. The fact that it's there means it has to be addressed. In this particular state, it is illegal to put a new roof system over wet substrate. It's illegal because it's a state-mandated building code. It's statutory, meaning that a roofer that did that could lose his license. In two different places, actually, two different statutes of the state that it says that. So it would basically be illegal twice, I guess. Not only that, but this particular policy afforded for the undamaged portions to be replaced. Going a step further, I've got another video about this you guys might have seen about decking in Oklahoma. and following the rabbit hole down throughout the spider webs to figure out how that all works. And it's a similar situation. One thing leads to another thing, which leads to another thing, which is here we are. We have to replace this entire roof because that's what the policy affords. Now, I've done another video, and I say this all the time. It's not these poor guys' fault. They don't know what's in the policy. They're just told to go out there to deny the roof to save the insurance company money. I get that. So while we're out there, we're trying to work out together how to get the carrier to pay for this. And his main concern is the moisture wasn't caused by hail, so they're going to try to deny it. I said, that's fine, but I'm going to need that in writing, and they're going to have to furnish the portion of the policy that says they're allowed to deny it. That's all. If it's legitimate, then I have no problem with that. The policy is king. The policy is why we're here. It's what dictates what happens here. If the policy allows them to deny it, then that's the way it is. The problem is I've already read through the policy and it doesn't say that. I know exactly what it says. So, anyway, we get off the roof at this point. I send in a proof of loss that has my thermal pictures. Oh, I missed the best part. Sorry, let me backtrack a second. The engineer that was up there with his Tramex finally, towards the end of our conversation, said, look, he said, I was trying to keep my mouth shut, but Greg is right. You can't break into this roof and do a small repair like you're talking about without replacing this entire thing. He says the moisture goes up 20 feet over here and 50 feet on this side. He goes, at that point, you're 13 foot from the other edge, and there's no way you can replace pieces of it. His own engineer said his engineering opinion is the entire roof needs to be replaced, right? The guy said that when we were on the roof. I didn't do a happy dance because I knew I was right. But for his engineer to say that made me feel really good about this claim. So imagine my surprise when I get a letter back saying that they need to go out there to do a core sample. Other than the core sample they had already done with the roofing contractor 280 some odd days prior to that. So I'm scratching my head now. I don't understand the method of thinking here. I don't understand what's going on. So I write back a letter. It wasn't a particularly nasty letter this time. I think it was nice. I just said, hey, thank you for your correspondence. We have every intention of complying with the policy and cooperating fully with your investigation and all reasonable requests. I understand you're asking for more time to investigate the loss, but you've already been investigating it for 455 days, all right, which is 7.5 times longer than allowed by state statute. So, on this particular date, the engineer hired by you, Mr. So-and-so, came out, did extensive moisture testing in numerous spots and found moisture in the roof substrate in at least 9 places. Since moisture, system verified the roof system would need to be replaced under these circumstances, in his professional engineering opinion. Since moisture has already been verified by your engineer, it seems doing an invasive test to my client's property in order to confirm what has already been substantiated by your expert is redundant and only serves to further delay the claim. Please help me understand how this invasive testing you are asking for will help further the investigation beyond what has already been confirmed by your engineer. All right, I am legitimately asking because I am confused what the core sample is going to do for you that hasn't already been determined by your own expert in the field while we were all three standing there, okay? Now, several days go by and I get a response not from this TPA but from the actual carrier adjuster handling the claim. It's less of a letter and more of a threat, I guess, is the only way I can put it. He says, thank you for the update. Please advise that we are taking this additional step to ensure that there was not a result of wind-driven rain. Please advise that we have been working under a reservation of rights, which enables us to take the necessary actions in order to determine the right coverage decision. Now, a reservation of rights discussion, it can be its own topic and on its own video later on. But basically what he's saying is he's been operating under the assumption he's going to get sued since the very beginning, when the fact is he has not. He has not sent a reservation of rights. and this is why documentation is important. I'm going to circle back around here in a second. He goes on to say that if he does not, he being me, basically if the public adjuster does not want us to take this step, please advise him to put it in writing and we will issue a denial letter based on what we do have. We are trying this avenue to see if at all possible we can grant coverage from a covered cause of loss. Here's where documentation is paramount. They've already opened coverage. I've got it documented. They've already sent a scope of repair, which is documented. They already have a proof of loss in their hands they've had at this point for 64 days, which is documented. Every step along the way in our CRM, which you can loosely call a CRM, but it's basically our diary notes, is documented. What he's trying to go back and set the picture as if this is something that's just happened, as if this is only a month old claim, and that's not the case at all. He's threatening to deny coverage on a claim where coverage has already been extended. He's acting as if they didn't write a scope for a repair. When it gets to this point, they're basically posturing because they know they've screwed up. This is what's happening here. We're going to be writing a letter back here in the next day or two, but I wanted to use this as an example of the games that are being played in the field. And it's not just games being played towards contractors or the property owners. They're playing these same games with us because they're banking on the fact that we don't keep good records, I'm guessing. It's going to get a little nasty before it gets better, but the next letter we write is also going to be a complaint letter to the Department of Insurance. It's going to be dual-purposed. The reason for that is I've already given them the opportunity to do the right thing. We all stood there on top of this roof and understood why the new roof needed to be there and needed to be covered, and it was basically pointed out by their own expert. Now, after 455 days of investigation, they're not only asking for more time, they're demanding it, and if we say no, they're threatening to deny coverage to the claim. If you don't know this, there are certain duties under the policy that must be followed by the policyholder or their representatives in order for coverage to be extended. They technically, if I deny them access to do their core sample, could deny the claim with just cause. They really could. We can't deny them access to the property. We can control when and where it happens and how it goes down, but we can't flat say no. And they know that. Being 455 days into this, here's what my experience and my gut tells me. If they can just push it a little longer and hope that we are one of those unorganized PA firms that doesn't stay on top of our business, all they got to do is push us a little bit further and it goes past that two-year tolling date, right? Because in most situations for commercial, and especially in this situation in this state, you've only got 2 years to sue after the date of loss or bring suit against them if they are in breach of their contract. I am just making an educated guess, and that's exactly what they're trying to do here. They want to do an invasive test, and then it's going to go to a lab for 60 days or so, and they're going to stall us for that, which is, you know, it's normal for me. I know a lot of you guys, that might be something new, but I only see claims that are that kind of, at that difficulty level, that kind of messed up. So this is what they're doing. They're going to be stalling this claim. They're asking for more time. No, I'm going to be filing a complaint with the insurance commissioner probably tomorrow or the next day, giving them all of this documentation that I have so that my complaint is actually going to be the response to their letter. Now, here's the best part of this. They did send a reservation of rights 7 days after this email threatening to take away coverage. They finally sent a reservation of rights letter. That's beautiful. So in that reservation of rights letter, they're referencing a whole different property, a whole different description of the property, different dates, the facts are wrong. I'm guessing they may have used a form letter and forgot to change a few things. So I don't even know if that reservation of rights letter even counts. It makes no matter. They've sent it, you know, 455 days, 460 days after the fact. So I don't even know how they expect that to stand up or how to be operating under that assumption when their investigative period is done. It's been done. 7.5 times ago it was done. You know, some states they've got 45 days to complete an investigation. Some it's 60. Others it's 120. in this particular state that we're doing this claim in, it's 60 days they've got. They can extend it in writing to 120 days, but they never send a letter asking for more time until 400 some odd days later, which is obviously well past the statutory time limit. So anyway, the letter that I'm going to be writing back is going to be using all of the facts from all of our documentation. It's going to be using the transcript from our meeting. It's going to be using all of the emails that we have, the letters back and forth, the dates and times, the people involved. It's very specifically telling the accurate story. It's going to be referencing this BS reservation of rights letter, I can tell you that, where their facts are all completely wrong. And we're going to see where that goes. I might do a part two to this video to let you guys know how it goes. I have a feeling I know how it's going to go, but again, I'm going to try to give them the chance to do the right thing. Why they didn't do it the week after we got off that roof is beyond me. The only thing I can think of is they set the reserve too low, and by setting the reserve too low, somebody doesn't want to get fired. Maybe they're trying to hold on to their job. In either case, that's not my policyholder's problem. That's not my client's problem. Their internal workings and their internal hangups is not my client's problem. My client should have been paid a year ago so he could put his roof back together and not have to worry about rain in the coming fall. Not have to worry about high winds messing up his roof any further. Making mistakes like that is not his responsibility. So I'm going to remind them of that here pretty quick. Moral of the story is documentation. Document, document, document. I know you guys are on the fly. I know that you're used to using sticky notes and text messages and you've got Facebook Messenger and you've got all kinds of stuff going on. Do your best to streamline what you've got going on because the documentation counts. And when it comes down to getting down and dirty, you don't want to have to go to 17 different things to try to collect all your data. You're going to want to have something centrally located. If you guys aren't using something like JobNimbus, Contractor Cloud, AccuLink, something of that sort to keep your files straight, you should really think about it. Keeping accurate diary notes, phone calls. Anytime somebody calls you or you talk to them on the phone, if you don't record those phone conversations, it's even more imperative that you actually, as soon as you get off the phone, take notes and document what was said. Send a follow-up email about what was said. Put everything in writing that you can possibly put in writing. Thank you for the follow-up. We discussed X, Y, and Z. If I have this wrong, please send me a note saying otherwise. 9 times out of 10, they're too busy or too lazy to send you back a note saying otherwise, so that gets documented the way it gets documented. Keep accurate notes. Document, document, document. Photographs. Photographs are extremely important as well. But everybody tells you that. Nobody's telling you how to keep letters and keep them organized. And, well, I don't know about nobody, but I haven't seen all the information. Everybody's talking about company cam and pictures. I love company cam. I love lots of pictures. I love 300 or 400 pictures. But it's just as important to keep track of your timelines, the people you're talking to, the meetings that are going on, email chains, the switches in email chains. All these things are very important to keep track of. And guys, that's all evidence you need to file complaints with your insurance commissioner. I know it. I'm going to see it in the comments. I don't need to hear it. Your insurance commission or your insurance department's probably worthless. I understand that. We might file or help our customers file probably about 20 complaints a month, if not more, and nothing ever happens. But what we've got is documentation that we tried and that we put in writing, and at least somebody's put on notice. And at least we've got a record of accuracy beyond what the insurance company is going to make up. What's that company out there? Big Red? You guys know. They love to put things in notes that aren't true, from what I've seen. In my experience, I've seen them read back to me, met with contractor and PA on site, and they agreed there wasn't any damage to this property. Well, that's funny because that's not what my recording shows. My recording shows that we both vehemently disagreed with the adjuster on site, so I'm wondering why his notes are reflecting otherwise. I've seen this happen, guys. If you don't have a recording or you don't have a log or you don't have something proving the contrary, then whatever they're saying and whatever their story is what goes. I mean, whoever's doing the best documentation is the person writing the history. And if you guys are writing nothing down or keeping track of nothing or not keeping accurate documentation, your story is going to go unnoticed. You don't have a story. What you have is a reaction. You get whatever they give you at that point because they're the ones telling the story. So don't fall into the trap. Don't fall into somebody else's story. You guys control your narrative. You control your story. Take amazing documentation, and you will see a difference in your files and how you get claims handled. Comment in the section below or send us questions. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Maybe we can do a part two about this after I get this complaint and letter written. You guys want any topics covered? I'd love to hear from you about that too. And remember, you're in better hands with a public adjuster.